The moon has inspired people to dream for thousands of years, but it wasn't until May 1961 that a U.S. president turned a dream into a national objective.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
President John F. Kennedy's address to Congress made a bold request, and Congress accepted the challenge. And with that, the race to the moon was on.
Over the next half dozen years, astronauts in capsules on top of rockets went step by step, blast by blast, toward that lunar goal. By July 16, 1969, the U.S. was set to complete the mission with Apollo 11.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
40 years ago, July 20th, at 3:17 p.m. Eastern, the astronauts landed on the moon. Neil Armstrong was at the doorway.
The surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine.
Armstrong, in a bulky white spacesuit, slowly descended a ladder and took stock of his surroundings.
That's one small step for man.
President Richard Nixon was in office. President Kennedy had been assassinated years before. So it was President Nixon who made a congratulatory call to Armstrong and his fellow astronaut Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the surface of the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made.
After their safe return to Earth, there were ticker tape parades for the astronauts and all manner of honors over the years. Last night in Washington, D.C., Neil Armstrong looked back on those times in a rare public appearance. And for a certified national hero, Armstrong was modest about his and NASA's historic achievement.
History is a sequence of random events and unpredictable choices, which is why the future is so difficult to foresee.
NPR's Wade Goodwin traveled to the Johnson Space Center in Houston to bring us the story of NASA then and NASA now.
Drive 30 miles south of Houston in the dead of summer, and it's easy to imagine what it must have been like back in 1963, cruising along with your young wife, hearts pounding with anticipation as you close in on your incredibly bright future as one of America's chosen astronauts. It was hot.
We arrived in Houston under the sweltering heat, staying at the Rice Hotel.
Buzz Aldrin, the second human being to step on the moon, doesn't have to imagine. He remembers everything about his 7 years at the Manned Spacecraft Center, as it was called back then.
It was just a very exciting time. We would fly in our T-38s down to Florida for the launches of the Gemini programs. Big construction that was taking place down there.
Aldrin says they worked hard and knew how to enjoy themselves, occasionally popping down to Cape Canaveral in sleek fighter jets to see how their future launch pad was coming along.
2, 1, 0, and liftoff of Space Shuttle Endeavour.
40 years later, the Space Shuttle Endeavour blasted off to rendezvous with the space station orbiting above. The nation barely looked up from its preoccupation with growing unemployment, the Sotomayor hearings, and the latest on what killed Michael Jackson. Perhaps no person has borne longer witness to the arc of NASA as an institution than spacesuit engineer Joe Cosmo. For the last 48 years, Cosmo has been at the heart of the organization, designing spacesuits for Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and the Space Shuttle astronauts.
Well, they were a lot of fun days. We were a lot younger, and times were different. Maybe the level of bureaucracy wasn't as high, and willing to go and do things.
Cosmo says it is instructive to remember that almost all of the first astronauts were test pilots. They infused the NASA culture with a confidence about taking chances. The prospect that their next flight could be their last was already familiar. even when Apollo 1 caught fire in 1967 and astronauts Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee died in the capsule, Cosmo says the predominant culture did not change.
They would have been the first to tell you, keep going, don't stop. We understand what the risk is.
Cosmo says both inside NASA and without, it was felt that America was competing with the Soviet Union, that the outcome of both the space race and the arms race was very much in doubt, and that there was no time to waste.
Some of our reports may have been 2 pages long, with maybe a couple of recommendations, and that's how we marched.
But Cosmo says NASA began to change as soon as America landed on the moon.
Actually, at the landing, the Apollo 11 landing, and there was a lot of senior people that were leaving. And I was wondering, well, why is that?
The reason it turned out was simple. America had won the race. The Russians beaten so decisively, they abandoned the attempt. For many at NASA, with the contest over, it was time to move on. Choice jobs in academia, with military contractors, and Wall Street awaited. Cosmo says NASA grew more cautious. Leaders were replaced by executives more inclined to manage. NASA grew more bureaucratic. The shuttle program, the Hubble telescope, and the International Space Station have all been successful, but none captured the imagination like the quest for the moon. Here in NASA's EMU lab, engineers are working on the Constellation program, preparing to go back to the moon and perhaps Mars. Extravehicular Mobility Unit is NASA speak for spacesuit. With bandsaws, drills, big garage doors, and blueprints spread everywhere, it looks like they could make spacesuits or perhaps pimp your ride in here. Of course, the big mural on one wall kind of gives it away. It shows an astronaut on the moon over the phrase, "Time to go for another walk."
I couldn't think of anything else I would rather be doing, any work that was more exciting.
24-year-old Kate Mitchell is one of the spacesuit engineers.
You know, I wake up every morning and I can't wait to get to work to do this test or that test.
Kate Mitchell and her 26-year-old colleague Dick Watson's eyes glow when they talk about walking on distant planets. These two young engineers have no doubt this is part of what America should be doing with its money and talent.
It's kind of one of those basic human questions of why did Christopher Columbus decide to sail across the ocean? There's always a desire to explore, to expand out, realize that we are not the center of the universe.
Watson's instinct to explore new worlds is part of the debate about where NASA should go next. Building new spacesuits is the least of the daunting challenges a voyage to another planet would face. A mission to Mars would be 180 days each way, and the astronauts would have to live on Mars 500 days before the planets are allied for the return trip. That's nearly 3 years in space. NASA is not close to that capability yet. Joe Cosmo recalls that during that incredible race to the moon, they had a plan to get to Mars by 1987. Given how far they'd come, how fast, it seemed completely within their grasp.
You look back on the 40 years, and it's hard to even believe we went to the moon. I mean, even I sometimes, I was out the other night smoking a cigar in the backyard looking at the moon, just thinking, gee whiz, we were there about 40 years ago. I hope we make it fairly soon again so I can see it once more.
For Cosmo, Americans walking on the moon was among our finest hours. He hopes it's nothing compared to what the future holds. Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
Back in 1969, most people understood why the United States had sent astronauts on that journey. Now, NASA wants to return to the moon, and the reasons for going this time are more complicated. NPR's Nell Greenfield Boyce reports.
In spring of 1961, the Soviet Union put Yuri Gagarin in orbit around the Earth. He was the first human in space. America sent Alan Shepard up a few weeks later. His flight was just up and back, not in orbit. And soon after, on May 25, 1961, President John F. Kennedy spoke before a special joint session of Congress.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
This came in a speech full of references to dangers like nuclear weapons. The Soviet Union was the threat, and its space achievements were troubling.
The dramatic achievements in space which occurred in recent weeks should have made clear to us all, as did the Sputnik in 1957, the impact of this adventure on the minds of men everywhere who are attempting to make a determination of which road they should take.
We really went to the moon because of the geopolitical rivalry between the United States and the Soviet Union, a competition on a broad front between two superpowers over control of the world, essentially.
Roger Lanius is a space historian at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C.
The United States wanted to demonstrate to everyone in the world, including the Soviet Union, that we were second to none when it came to science and technology.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running.
And the whole world was watching as Neil Armstrong took those first steps.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
These days, the world is different. Many people hardly notice that astronauts now live in space 24/7. Russians, Americans, Europeans, Canadians, the Japanese. Men and women hang out together in a huge space station, just a couple hundred miles up. The space shuttle goes there, but the shuttle can't go to the moon. So, 5 years ago, President George Bush gave a speech saying NASA should design new rockets and capsules to return to the moon by 2020. That's what the agency has been working towards. But in an era with no Cold War, when the U.S. is the unquestioned leader in space, some people wonder if this moon plan makes any sense.
I mean, that is a question that I hear quite frequently. They say, hey, we've been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Why are we looking at that?
John Olson works at NASA headquarters in Washington, helping to direct the agency's exploration program.
You know, we're not going back as a race. We're not going back for flags and footsteps. We're going back for really what is the beginning of a journey.
He says this time, NASA is making a sustained, more affordable effort to move to the moon and beyond, onto Mars. But why do that?
Well, you know, we like to categorize that into like six themes, six big thrusts. And the first is about human civilization. It's about our innate desire and yearning to explore the unknown and to expand. It could be also about species preservation as part of
that. He lists lots of reasons. Technology development, scientific exploration, economic expansion, international cooperation, engaging the public.
But it's also about believing in something bigger and committing to the concept that, much like the going to the moon the first time, we learned that nothing is impossible if you focus your resources and your time and talent on that endeavor.
Do you worry that that's sort of so many different goals that the public is not really going to be able to like latch onto them? Because for the first moonshot, it was pretty clear. It was like beat the Russians first on the moon.
You know, six primary themes. Yes, it's not one or it's not two, but you know, I think each person is somewhat individual.
So he says different people might find a moonshot compelling for different reasons. Jim Bell is a scientist who's been involved in many robotic space missions. He's also the president of the Planetary Society, a group of space enthusiasts. It recently put out a report saying, hey, if you're going to build new rockets, remember that there are other places astronauts could go besides the moon, like near-Earth asteroids, space rocks we should know about, in case one of them ever takes aim at our planet.
Asteroids may be easier to get to than the moon, some, and they're a new destination. You know, let's not discount the newness angle in helping to inspire and motivate space exploration.
He says his group isn't anti-moon. They just wonder if it should loom so large in NASA's plans.
I think that there would be a time in a long-term, long-focused, sustainable program when it makes sense to go to the moon. I'm not sure that 2020 is that time. It's awfully soon.
That timetable might change. President Obama's administration has put together a panel of outside experts to reassess all human spaceflight plans. It's chaired by Norm Augustine. At a press conference, he said they'd look at, quote, the full spectrum of possible destinations. He acknowledged that the Cold War is over, and we're in a period of great financial distress.
But people are people, and I can remember how excited people were at when Neil and Buzz walked on the moon and Mike circled the moon, what a shot it gave this nation at a time it really needed it.
His panel will lay out options by the end of the summer. After that, President Obama and Congress will have to decide where NASA's astronauts should go next. Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.
What better way to celebrate the moon landing than with a giant moon pie? At the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, NASA served up a 55-pound version of the chocolatey marshmallow treat. The monster moon pie was 40 inches in diameter to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the first moon walk. It contained 6 pounds of chocolate, 14 pounds of marshmallows, and a whole bunch of graham crackers. But there were no giant bites for man or mankind. Instead, the colossal concoction was sliced into small pieces and given away to tourists at Cape Canaveral.
What the future holds may indeed depend on what young people think about going to the moon and beyond. Nell Greenfield Boyce went out in Washington, D.C. to ask some young people.
Laura Fabens-Lassen is from Philadelphia. She's 20 years old, so she was born years after Apollo ended and astronauts stopped walking on the moon.
When you think of the moon and people walking on the moon, how does that seem to you?
I'm not really fazed by that. It doesn't seem particularly... It doesn't surprise. It doesn't seem like a big ordeal to me.
If they had another moon landing and it was sort of on TV, would you be watching it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd watch it. Definitely.
Someone her age only knows about moonwalking from movies and books, and she's got plenty of company.
Half the world's population has been born since we stopped going to the moon.
Roger Lanius is a curator at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum.
In the true sense of the term, it's history for them.
NASA has long-term plans to put people back on the moon and go on to Mars. But young adults have grown up with routine space shuttle flights and tragedies like Challenger and Columbia. One survey a few years ago suggested that they aren't that enthusiastic about a moon mission. If the younger generation isn't as interested, that could be a problem for NASA, because today's kids will be tomorrow's voting taxpayers.
I'm Tice Kamaniak and I'm 7.
And do you have any thoughts about whether or not people should be going to the moon?
That'd be good, but I don't really know, like, if they should or shouldn't, because, yeah.
Well, like, for example, would you personally be interested if given an opportunity to get off the planet?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Other kids, like Abby Jones and Alina Church, are more gung-ho.
I think it'd be really, really fun to walk on the moon and search everything. All the planets and asteroid belts.
I think that NASA should be returning my friends, well, some of them, they are interested in space, and I know I am, but I'm not sure about other people around me.
If I go to a classroom today, it's different than when I was an astronaut in 1980.
Charles Bolden is President Obama's pick to be the next head of NASA.
I could ask, how many of you want to be an astronaut? And every hand went up in the class.
These days, he says, he'll see maybe 3 hands.
But we do have to reinvigorate the interest of youth in this country if we're going to do anything.
So NASA is tweeting and Facebooking and trying to catch the attention of teenagers like August Hagen, who is, you know, kind of open to the idea.
Are you into moon exploration? Is an astronaut a career that you would ever consider?
I don't think I would consider it, but I think it might be an interesting just thing to study.
Why wouldn't you consider it?
I sort of have a fear of heights.
Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.